everybody.
Hi, friends. Well, from gorgeous Salt Lake City, Utah.
It's Thank God I'm Atheist.
The podcast.
I'm Frank Feldman.
And I'm Dan Beecher.
And coming up on the show today,
who is
Dan? Who is leaving the Mormon Church? Who are these people? We know a lot of people are leaving.
We personally know a few who have left.
And maybe are some. Some researchers had a similar question and they looked into it. They did a survey and we're going to be talking about it on the second half of the show.
Droves. I would say it's droves that they are leaving in.
It's a remarkable shift that's currently taking place. And something that is tangible here in where we live in the state of Utah. Yeah. So,
and let me tell you something. It's the good ones that are leaving. So, like, what's left is getting yuckier. Like, if you think Mormons are yucky now, it's only getting worse. Like, the good people are bailing. And all, it's sludge. It is sludge that is remaining.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be one nasty little cesspool when it's all done. Yeah. But speaking of that cesspool, this week, news came out that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the LDS Church, the Mormon Church.
This is one of the few times when that appellation is important.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah, it's important to not just say Mormons or whatever.
The Downtown Church. as I like to call it, they have announced, along with the Community of Christ, which has a less Mormony sort of name. They used to be called the Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. They dropped that back in the 90s, I think, maybe early 2000s for Community of Christ. It's a smaller organization. The LDS Church has 17. Well, they claim to have 17 million followers, and Community of Christ is about 250,000.
Right. And
the LDS Church has $265 billion in the bank. And as we will find out soon enough, the Community of Christ does not have that much, but they now do have a sizable amount of $192 million. That the LDS Church, gave them, exchanged with them as they purchased the Kirtland Temple in Kirtland, Ohio. It is now, for those of you not super familiar with Mormon history, this was...
And God help you, I hope you're not.
Like, your life is all so much better for it.
I mean, it's fascinating. I would love to make a documentary about church history from like our perspective.
Sure. Yeah.
Because it would be like just wacky fun.
Yeah.
Well, we did not grow up with actual Mormon church history, but we definitely grew up with a version of it.
Right. A building, though, that the Kirtland Temple is a building, though, that holds a very important place in all of the Mormon movements, the LDS, the Latter-day Saint movement's history.
Yeah.
Because it is the first temple. It was dedicated by Joseph Smith. And it was built before he had fully, like, come up with some of his wackier ideas. And so it was built essentially as a meeting house, right?
Right.
A very important and sacred meeting house. It is the building, after all, Dan, where the Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, the downtown people, right? The big one. They believe this. Not all the Community of Christ doesn't believe this. But they believe that it is in the Kirtland Temple that Jesus appeared alongside Moses, Elijah,
Elvis, and Prince.
Yes, indeed. All the greats, all the big ones. Everybody showed up, and that's where Joseph Smith got the power for sealing couples for marriage for all eternity. And so the dedication, that wasn't, I guess, at the dedication. That was shortly after the dedication. Mm. But the dedication itself, Dan, a 7-hour extravaganza.
Oh, my goodness. They probably did a Hosanna shout and everything.
That's where it started. Yeah, they did the Hosanna shout. They sang "The Spirit of God Like a Fire is Burning." Mm. There was a 2.5-hour sermon by Sidney Rigdon. And then Joseph Smith offered the dedicatory prayer. And then Brigham Young broke out into tongues. He spoke in tongues.
Oh, wow. That is not a Mormon thing. That is not common.
But he was feeling it that day. That was such a big day. So, yes.
I mean, after 2.5 hours of being preached at and like a whole bunch of other boring shit, I can imagine I would be speaking in tongues too. Like it would just,
Well, and Sidney Rigdon, I don't think was the charismatic one, right? So
right, yeah.
He was, exactly. So that was a little, boy, if you got that one, everyone.
Yeah. 7 hours, come on, man. That's you're killing me. Listen, 7 hours it is like 24 hours. 7 hours of Mormon time is like 24 hours of like normal person time. Because it is, Mormons are extra boring.
Woo. Yeah. Well, anyway, $192 million transferring from the downtown church to the Community of Christ.
Yeah.
They're getting a lot for it, though. I mean, it does feel like maybe they overpaid. They have been vying for this thing for fucking ever. They've been wanting the Kirtland Temple. Kirtland. Which one's the Costco brand?
The Kirtland Signature Temple.
Now, they've been coveting this thing, right? Oh, and one of the things that came to mind for me was like, because the building's not in great shape, right? Because the Community of Christ just doesn't have the resources. They're not terribly off, you know, but they're not. $265 billion strong, right?
No.
And they, so the building apparently is a little bit in disrepair, needs some help. And I just had to start thinking about the time that the LDS Church gave a large chunk of money to the Catholic diocese here in Salt Lake City to help them renovate the Cathedral of the Madeleine here in Salt Lake, right, which is a lovely, lovely, you know, historic cathedral in town. And they did it as just, you know, the kindness of their heart, right? I know they gave, through the Community Foundation, they gave a bunch of money to the Krishna Temple, right? Down in, I think the one, had to have been the one down in Spanish Fork. And so, like, they have this history of generosity, right? Of helping organizations with their buildings. And I just think it is such a great...
It's telling.
It's very telling, thank you, about their attitude about the Kirtland Temple and the degree to which they coveted it. That they, through the years, they had been offering and offering and offering, and the Community of Christ kept refusing. They swore.
Because the Community of Christ vowed they were never going to sell this to them. They're, because, look, what we're talking about is competing narratives about the true procession of the, of the power of the Mormon priesthood,
right?
And and they both have valid claims on it.
Yeah,
I think not if you ask anyone from either of the religions,
or if you just are centered in reality, right?
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, like, you know, Community of Christ arguably has a better claim on the
because they say that it was that Joseph Smith's juniors. That's the Joseph Smith you all know about. Joseph Smith Jr., that he said that it was going to be his son, Joseph Smith III,
who was going to take over,
right? There was sort of a blessing that he gave him, and sort of had sort of in the blessing, there was a promise that he would someday lead the church, right? And so that's their claim.
Yeah.
Whereas the Mormons downtown, their claim is that Joseph Smith Brigham Young transfigured into Joseph Smith during a speech, and that was that.
Yeah.
So.
You all saw that, right? Anyway.
There wasn't a single diary that recorded that event from anybody that was there that day. It was decades later before the first recorded diary entry telling that story.
How dare you?
That's the entire basis for that silly, silly, silly lie. But anyway, they got a lot of other stuff in addition. Because, I mean, seriously, $192 million for a beat up old church is a lot to pay. So they did get some other stuff. They got the Bible that Joseph Smith used during his translation of the good
that
book.
He plagiarized.
The manuscripts of the Joseph Smith translation of the Bible as well. Seven letters from Joseph Smith to his wife, Emma. A bunch of other stuff. Emma Smith's walking stick.
Emma Smith was a much more prominent figure in the community of Christ than in the LDS church.
Yeah, so
because she was the one that sort of got her son to be the big deal prophet, next prophet.
Right. So, but the fact that they got her stick, the Mormons got the community
they got the
of
stick.
Christ's stick is very big. And then a bunch of homes that belonged to early members. They also got, it's called the, bear with me, the little red, I'm sorry, the brick, the red brick store, which is, I believe that's in Nauvoo. They got a bunch of stuff in Nauvoo. But that is the founding site of the Relief Society.
And
so that's a really big deal for the Mormons.
Look, if you don't know Mormon history, none of this means much to you. But the fact of the matter is that, like, the Mormons have won.
I think what
we can declare is that might makes right, and dollars, you know, money talks, and bullshit walks, and
they've got the money.
They got the money.
We've
so
got oodles and oodles of it. And
my very Mormon mother-in-law sent me a text that was like, I'm just so happy that this happened, and I just wanted, you know, my dad when he was alive was a Mormon historian. And she was like, it just made me think about your dad and how happy he would be about this. And I was like, actually, I didn't say this to her, but this whole thing makes me very sad.
Mm-hmm.
I was very happy that the community of Christ owned those things because it just stuck in the craw and they have a right to it.
Right.
You know, the Brighamites left.
Right.
So these guys have a right to it. And so it makes me sad, and I think it might have made my dad sad a little bit, but, like, you have to understand that in the minds of Mormonism, more of, like, you know, boots on the ground Mormons, there's no, like, it's shocking that they didn't own this. I'm sure it would come as a shock to most Mormons that they didn't already own this, and clearly it's right. That, like, this is a blessing from God, so there you go.
And the good thing to touch upon, the fact that it is, there are actually a lot of people who are sad. The Community of Christ membership apparently is really sad about this.
Yeah, it would be devastating.
Even though the money is going to be put to really good use, they plan on sort of building up their endowment and, you know.
Well, and remember that they have a female prophet. Uh-huh. They ordain women and they accept gay marriage and all this stuff. So they're definitely the better Mormons.
And
they are the winning Mormons.
And they gave something over to the ones that are not that.
The shitbird Mormons. Yeah. All right. I'm going to move on to Catholics because they can be shitbirds as well. We don't want to just talk about one group of shitbirds. There's a Catholic news site, and I'm going to use news in as like sarcastic of scare quotes as possible, because this is a far right wing conservative news site called Church Militant.
Ugh. I don't like that at all.
No, it doesn't sound good, does it? It used to be called something like True Catholic something something, and the Catholic Church was like, you know, you need to not say that. You're not affiliated with us. And also you should see the picture. Like, every article I've found about this has a picture of the founder of Church Militant, a guy named Michael Voris, whose hair, it looks like bad fake doll hair. not like just a little bit fake. It looks like the bad stuff.
Mm, okay.
It's very fluffy. Anyway. he's no longer any. Okay, so here's the deal. This shitty outlet has now, they've been in, you know, these are guys who, they, you know, they hate the gays extra good, and they hate all of, you know, they hate the drag queens and all the things that they're supposed to hate. So much so that they would publish all these articles that were really, really shitty. One of the articles involved a guy named Reverend Georges Dallaire, from Manchester, New Hampshire, who is obviously a priest. And he sued for defamation because they were claiming a whole bunch of shit about him. Nothing that bad, except that, like, they were saying that he was very vindictive because he was suing the St. Benedict Center. Anyway, there was a whole thing. The article was later disavowed by this. It was so bad that it was disavowed by this organization. You know you're bad when you're disavowed by by church militant. But that didn't stop him from suing for defamation. He's just won. So church militant they're going to have to pay him $500,000.
Oh, wow.
And they're shutting down.
Wow. That's wow. Okay.
Or at least that is what they have represented to the plaintiff as one of the stipulations of their thing. We'll see if it happens. Okay. But it's supposed to happen by the end of the month. So.
Huh. All right. Well, that's very, very good.
So fuck you, Catholic shitbirds. I'm sticking with shitbirds.
Okay. Well, I've got some shitbirds as well, Dan.
Excellent.
This has to do with the Greek Orthodox Church. By the end of this story, I think you'll agree. Shitbirds. you will recall, Dan, in Greece last month, February 15th, in fact, to be precise, Greece passed a law legalizing gay marriage.
And they sure did. And
we'd also talked about this in the lead up to it as well. That the fact that the Greek Orthodox Church was none too happy about this. And we knew they wouldn't be, right?
Yeah, but this was the first Orthodox country that had legalized gay marriage.
So, and so they had they've had a big old response about the whole thing. You know, they've called the decision demonic. You know. They have demanded the prelates of the church.
The prelates?
Prelates? Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
The prelates? Okay. The prelates of the church have demanded, Dan, that punitive measures be taken against the members of parliament who voted for this. And, well, some local clerics have decided to do that exactly. They have banned, this is on the island of Corfu.
Okay.
Where the local clerics have banned two members of parliament from participating in religious rites. They accuse the members of parliament of committing, quote, the deepest spiritual and moral error. for us, these two deputies cannot consider themselves active members of the church. We exhort them to repent for their impropriety. Failure to do so, apparently, will automatically result in the lawmakers being excluded from the Christian rite of communion and other church events.
You don't get to eat our bread.
Believe me, there's better bread than your bread, guys.
Right.
And let's see. The church's governing body, the Holy Synod, so this is now on a national level, they have announced that their Orthodox Sunday services, that's on the March 24th, so that's coming up. This is apparently one of the holiest days in the Eastern Orthodox calendar, right? It's this Orthodox Sunday. That these services will not be held, as is the tradition, in the capital's cathedral, but in a smaller church where the president, Katerina Sakalapar, Greeks and your last names, Sakalaparopoulou, she won't be there. She has not been invited. They will not hold Orthodox Sunday with her.
No Sacharapathakathus for you.
the top guy, I won't try to say his name, and other synod members also made it clear they would decline the president's invitation to a meal that is usually attended by the country's secular and spiritual leaders on the same day. One cleric apparently said that the archbishop has been, quote, distressed by the news that Sakalaparapalu, which is everyone, it's so wrong. That's not her name. I'm so sorry. Had attended a celebratory dinner with government officials after the vote. apparently she went to dinner to celebrate after the law passed at a restaurant that was owned by members of the LGBTQ plus community.
Fuck you.
He's distressed about that, damn. And let's see, an open letter from a bishop says, our Orthodox Church is under siege. A revolution should not be called, or should be called, against all those diluting the law of God. The protagonist of this moral crime, the prime minister of Greece, and the 175 deputies in the Greek parliament should be excommunicated. Now, so here's the thing, right? They're saying our Orthodox Church is under siege. No, it's not. The government changed a law, a secular law, that affects all of the people in the country, whether they are members of your church or not, right? And which, of course, basically everybody's Greek Orthodox, but regardless, there are those that are not. It is a secular decision. They didn't tell you have to do or don't do anything.
Right.
They are not attacking you, right?
Yes, they are. We got to call the shots before and now we don't.
And now they're not listening to us anymore. And it's How dare they? You know, and apparently the public is split still in Greece on this issue. The fact of the matter is it'll go... it will most likely go like it has everywhere else in the world where gay marriage gets legalized and all of a sudden it was by some narrow margin or whatever. And then all of a sudden, nobody cares anymore.
Yeah.
Everybody's just like in the polling in the United States is super high on support for gay marriage. And this was a place where, I mean, it's inconceivable to me, right?
Yeah.
That 20 years ago, right, that this country would just be like, fuck it. Gay marriage. Who cares?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's polling so fine that like they had to pivot from hating gays to like hating drag queens and trans people. So
they had to rebrand their hate.
They were like, oh shit, we're getting zero traction here.
And yeah. So
because everybody likes going to their nephew's gay marriage.
Right. They're great. They're awesome. Yeah. And the Greeks are going to do it up. They're going to have a great time. They're going to have literally big fat Greek gay weddings.
Yeah.
And it's going to be fantastic and wonderful. So hats off. I guess I wasn't part of that episode where it was announced.
That's right.
But hats off to the Greek government for doing this and fuck you Greek Orthodox Church. So
yeah,
for being little crybabies about this whole thing.
All right. Well, I'm gonna stay in Europe, but it's gonna be brace yourselves. This is literally I'm gonna throw out a trigger warning for anti-Semitism just because it's getting bad out there, you guys.
Yeah,
and not just here. It is like on the rise very much here in the States, but I saw multiple stories that I just thought. It's a story that I'm seeing these multiple stories. And these are one-offs. These are in, you know, little incidents where, like, for instance, in France, an assailant attacked, they're on the hunt, but an assailant attacked a guy in his early 60s. And it was very clearly just an anti-Semitic attack. The guy's Jewish and got attacked for it, just got punched. Out of nowhere.
Jesus Christ.
In Switzerland, it's much worse. A 15-year-old went and got into an altercation with a 50-year-old man and stabbed him.
What?
So this kind of thing, just sort of random attacks on Jewish people is definitely going up and is very, very scary. Presumably it's to do with the stuff that's going on in Israel, though we've been seeing anti-Semitism on the rise here in the United States because the far right has pivoted back to the hating of Jewish people as like one of their, you know, wedge issues.
Yeah.
So
that's wild.
And that's been going on for a while now. It's only just now stopped being encoded in words like globalist and, you know, George Soros. And, you know, there were all of these sort of dog whistle anti-Semitic things. But now it's starting to just be out in the open, and it's very bad. And, you know, when teenagers are doing it, you know that they're being taught that.
Yeah.
By somebody. So not great, not great, and not just here. So we need to be very much on the lookout for that.
All right. Well, the world descends into chaos.
Yep.
Thanks, Dan, for that.
You're very welcome.
I
warned you. I warned you. So now let's start digging ourselves back out.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really have anything to say about all that. Sadly. All right. Dan.
Yes.
Here's some good news.
Good.
This is good news.
Thank God.
Good. Right on the heels of that. It's mostly good. Let me also kind of just say that. No news is just good news anymore, guys. There's always, and then the other shoe drops. The shoe that drops is not huge, I don't think, for this one, but it's there. This has to do with the recent announcement from the Biden administration that has about a rule change that addresses religious liberty protections in sort of any organization that is providing social services with government money, right?
Mm.
If they accept any government money, they have to abide by the federal government's rules, right?
Yeah.
Now, in this country, we have just outsourced our social services. Our social safety net is largely especially for the very poor or the very old, it's largely in the hands of just community organizations, which often are religious, faith-based organizations, right?
Yeah, it's not. It's a very bad system.
It's not the best way of handling all of this. But I mean, this is like food banks, shelters, elder care, domestic violence, and homelessness issues.
All those things that governments should definitely be in charge of.
Probably be involved in. But anyway, they have issued a rule that it will now help people who are receiving aid from any of these faith-based service providers that ensures that the providers cannot withhold help based on religious affiliation, for one, nor can they require beneficiaries to participate in any religious activity in order to receive help, which I have personally witnessed a van pull up outside of where I used to work, which was kind of near a hotbed of sort of homelessness and whatnot, very close to one of the soup kitchens downtown. And a van pulled up, set up their little pop-up tents, put out some tables, set up a little food line thing. And then people were lining up, and before anybody could have anything, preacher stood in front of them all, gave his little 15-minute spiel, made everybody pray, and then they could get food, right? So they can still do that. They just can't also take government money, right?
Yeah.
And it's possible that this was just 100% just donations from their community, but it is something that religious groups feel like it is within their right and authority to push their religion on people who just desperately need the services that they're providing, like food or shelter.
Well, Frank, I think what you're not thinking about is what is the point of helping other humans if you're not drafting them into your team?
If you're not getting, listen, there's some quid pro quo here, guys.
What am I getting out of this is what I want to know. When I'm helping somebody, I got to know what's in it for me.
Yeah. Apparently, some of these religious freedom protections, not all of them, but some of them were rescinded by the last guy. It also affects people who were searching for a job, receiving job training assistance, so forth and so on. Now, this is the part that maybe it's bad. I'm not sure. It doesn't seem like I don't really care, but it is, I guess, the bad part. These new rules clarify that faith-based organizations should be able to compete equally with secular providers for awards while keeping their religious character, right? So they're firming up the whole, like, yes, we will give you money, and we'll give you the money on equal grounds with the secular providers, but you have to follow our rules, is what they're saying. So they're giving a little, they're taking some, whatever.
I mean, it sounds right. This sounds like a good thing. I'm sure that if somebody's going to find a way to just, well, what will happen is they just don't care, and then they'll dare the government to take their funding away.
But I will say this, while it is not a great system, it is the system that we have. And if it helps make it more robust, and gets a little bit more money out there with more services provided, at this point, I mean, yes, let's try to the system should be thrown out and reformed and whatnot. But
yeah,
I mean, this is sweeping. It's did I say that it was like 9 different departments that are affected? HHS, agriculture, education, homeland security, housing and urban development, justice, labor, veterans affairs, and the U.S. Agency for International Development. So it's really great. Let's see. One of the key protections is a requirement that organizations receiving federal grants for U.S. social service programs inform. Oh, this is great. That they inform beneficiaries of their right to not be discriminated against. On the basis of their religion. So so they're going to have signs up or some sort of something that clearly communicates to the people receiving their services that they cannot be discriminated against.
They're basically just going to say, they're going to get up over the loudspeaker and say, I'm about to pray. You don't have to listen to get the food.
So be there. Plug your ears, everybody.
Yeah. If you don't like if you hate Jesus,
yeah,
I suppose you can choose not to listen.
Yeah. And apparently they're also, as far as like government agencies, one of the things they're going to be trying to do is to encourage that these groups aid the beneficiaries in locating alternative providers in their region that are more compatible with their beliefs. It's just sort of part of, hey, like, oh yeah, we need to direct you to a soup kitchen. You know, what are you? Right. oh, good. There's a Baptist one over there. Or, oh yeah, there's a one over there. Oh, you know what? Those guys, they don't really care what religion you are. That would probably be a good one for you.
Right. Yeah.
There
you go.
I think it's some great reform. It's kind of some of that sleeper news that you don't really hear about.
Right.
But I think that's good stuff.
That's nice.
So,
all right. Well, I'm going to close this off with our friends over at Liberty University, possibly our favorite university in the country.
What's the freest?
It's in the name. you can't go wrong with Liberty. Although, as we've talked about many times, ironically, Liberty has a very strict code of conduct that they call like the Liberty Way or whatever. That is like, no, I think that is it. It's the Liberty Way. and it's like, you can't do anything that college students want to do. Anywho, one of the nice things, if you want to go to Liberty University, they have said for years that they are one of the nation's safest campuses. You know, there's 15,000 students there in Lynchburg, Virginia, and you can feel comfortable sending your child there because they're one of the safest. Or are they? It turns out that when you only have one police officer on duty for 15,000 students, and then when things are reported, you shame the victim and then do nothing to the perpetrator, and then you don't report it as a crime in your crime statistics, it turns out maybe you're not as safe as you were claiming. They were very, very naughty. And unfortunately for them, we have a little thing called the Clery Act, which is a law here in the United States that basically requires colleges and universities, again, and this is a thing just like your story, where it can really only have this effect on colleges and universities that receive federal funding.
Mm.
But if the university receives federal funding, they have to, there are certain guidelines for how they have to report their and collect crime statistics and data for their campus and notify students. So they ran afoul of this, having done a whole like laundry list of bullshit for years and years and years, going back to like the time period that was reviewed was from 2016 to 2023. But of course, there's no reason to believe it was any better before 2016. Anywho, they have been charged. They have agreed to pay a fine.
Oh.
It is the largest fine that has ever been incurred by any institution for a violation of the Clery Act.
Really?
$14 million.
You're kidding me.
They have to pay.
Whoa. Well, because they're not keeping their students safe.
Right. Exactly.
What a wretched organization.
Yeah. Hopefully that is enough to chasten them enough to like not want to have this happen to them again. And maybe they'll actually start taking the safety of their students seriously, which would be great.
They're going to hire another police officer.
Yeah. They're going to have two of them. And like
round the clock, they're going to have, I mean, they're going to be putting in some overtime, but
yeah, it's absurd. And you know, there are horrific stories of, you know, women being attacked and then, you know, the school telling the women that, like, there was one story that I read about where a woman was raped. And then later it was reported in, you know, their internal filings that she had consented to this because at one point she gave in and allowed the rape to continue for her to protect her own safety.
Oh, Jesus.
It was at knife point.
Oh, God.
So that's how that went.
That's awful.
Yeah, not a lot of fun, but a great way to end our segment, isn't it? Just Dan, so upbeat.
You've been such just a...
I'm a fucking ray of sunshine, you guys. Just
lifting us up, making us feel better, Dan.
Well, but we should all feel better about the fact that they have to pay $14 million.
That's where you leave this story, Dan.
I should have.
You completely flipped it.
I told it in the wrong order. Sorry, everybody. $14 million. That they have to pay.
Focus on that, everyone.
And hopefully things will go better. If you would like to chastise me for not telling my stories in a way that makes you feel good at the end,
and seriously, please do.
Feel free. You can write into me or us at podcast@thankgodimatheist.com.
Or call and leave us a voicemail message and tell us all about it. The telephone number is 424-666-8442. Stick around. There's more show coming up.
Now, Frank, you remember earlier in the show how I did a trigger warning for anti-Semitism?
Yes.
Let's keep that in place, you please.
Damn.
As we delve into the rantings of one Stu Peters, right-wing broadcaster extraordinaire.
Oh, boy.
I just want, look, it's important that we have sort of the state of the union we have an understanding of where the right wing is right now. And I think this is it, unfortunately. So let's hear what Stu has to say.
All right.
About what might be going wrong in our country.
When the whole country is falling apart, you look to, well, who's leading it? And you have all these unelected Jews, and you're like, oh my God, it's all the Jews. And then I go on Alex Jones, and I'm like, look, this is a big problem, the Jews. And then I start digging into it more. And like every conversation that I have, I mean, it could be about food that's bad for you. It could be about what's being sprayed in the skies. It could be about, you know, the dog food that you feed. And everything is Jews. It's all like everything that's going wrong in every sector of life. It's like the person that's leading it happens to claim to be Jewish. And so I like cognitively made the decision. I'm going to try to pull back and not have this tunnel vision. And so it's like, well, these Catholics, oh good. The Catholics are finally, you know, behind something. These fake Catholics are ruining our country with all of this immigration stuff. And guess who's funding the fake Catholics? The Jews.
There you go.
Fake That's, Catholics? No, where does that?
Well, because it, if they were real Catholics, they wouldn't be doing the bad thing.
If they were real Catholics, they'd be on the unelected Catholics on the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's like
those,
like
how?
No true Scotsman fallacy has become like, you can't have a better example of that than real Jews are the ones who do bad things, but fake Catholics.
Right.
Yeah.
Fake Catholics. Wow. Biden is a fake Catholic.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
But apparently funded by real Jews. Jesus Christ. Ugly. It's really
awful and
and
terrifying.
The
freedom that they are feeling to say this. I mean, they always were free to say it, but the actual like social freedom, right?
Yeah.
That kind of freedom.
I'm starting to believe that this internet thing wasn't a good idea.
You know, I would turn it back. I would turn it back. I would say keep the internet, throw out everything Facebook and beyond. Like Friendster? Friendster was fine. Friendster, I never saw anything anti-Semitic on Friendster.
Yeah, you know? It would have turned there. It would have gone there. You can't hold it back.
You can only have 8 friends.
Oh, really?
No. You can only post 8 photos. That's what it was. You can have a bunch of friends. You can only post 8 photos total.
That's really funny. Yeah. Well, they had, you know, they had a limited number of servers.
Hard drives just weren't what they are today. Yeah.
It's true. Yeah. All right. You know, since we're all depressed anyway, I'm just going to start with a difficult email that I think we need to address, and then we're going to go on and it'll be fun after that.
Okay.
And this is from Trini, who wrote in to say, hi, I would love to hear your thoughts on this. And she's sent us an article. And the article she quotes a relevant moment from the article. She says, maybe it's because I am in California where I have the luxury of a protest vote. But I completely agree with this article that, quote, we won't vote for Biden because genocide is a moral, not political red line. Trini goes on to say, I'm so fed up with genocide, Joe, that I joined as a volunteer for Cornel West's campaign. I think we have to seriously consider a third party because more and more people are vocalizing their unwillingness to support Biden as a result of his refusal to stop sending arms to Israel. I'm not going to go. I just wanted to address this because I think, you know, you and I have come out very forcefully and said you have to vote for Joe Biden because it's like there's no chance that it is any better. And there's every chance that it will be much, much worse with Donald Trump.
Right.
And I, you know, I've seen this sentiment being reflected in a lot of, especially young people's thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. Again, like, here's the thing. I fucking hate how Biden has been handling the stuff in Israel. I want to see much more forceful dealings from the Biden administration. But Joe Biden is not committing genocide.
Yeah, I think that's easy to say.
You're not saying that's easy for you to say. You're saying correct, right?
Yes.
You're agreeing. Yes.
With just the sort of facts on the ground.
Yeah. Like, like, you can Joe call Biden him genocide is Joe.
Is not committing genocide. And I don't Joe think Biden that he's... Joe Biden is not. I don't think he's supporting genocide. I think that he's navigating tricky, tricky foreign relations waters that are impossible, right? And while I wish we could hear something from the administration denouncing Israel's actions, because they do need to
Kamala Harris just called for a ceasefire.
Yeah, and I that seems to be kind of a test balloon that they're trying to start go that way.
Yeah,
but you know, like, I'm not going to get into all the rationalizations of like how the Biden administration has been trying to handle this, but
you'd be a fool to think that Trump would be any better on this. Personally, I think.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Neither of those is a good reason to vote for a third party.
No,
because it's a third party cannot win. We know that Cornel West, and I like Cornel West.
Sure.
I think he's great.
Right.
He can't win.
Right. He won't win.
And if he can't win, then a vote for Cornel West is a vote for Donald Trump. And Donald Trump is in every way worse than Joe Biden.
Right.
Be disappointed in Biden. That's fine.
And I know there's like this, because I heard somebody who was talking about, somebody I know who was talking about voting for a third party candidate. And it was kind of this attitude of like, because some of the things that people in the room were saying were like, yeah, but I mean, essentially what you just said, like the Trump will destroy this country. Right. And his attitude was basically like, well, maybe that's what it's going to take for things to get better. And it's like, no, no.
Yeah.
Like nobody wants to live through that. Right.
Right.
Like things aren't super great, but things, I mean, I don't want to be anyway.
Yeah.
It's the fact of the matter is, you're absolutely right, Dan. Trump cannot be the next president of this country. And for our democratic institutions to survive in the way that they currently exist. And also, not for nothing, and I know this one, people may not really appreciate this point either, but like our position globally is really, really important for international order. And it is something that is trying, like, the forces in this world are trying to erode America's position. Countries like Russia would love to see a diminished America.
Yeah.
China would love to see a diminished America. These are not countries that you want to have more influence, more internationally. And
for all of America's faults, and there are, and they are manifold.
Yeah.
You don't want these bad actors.
You do not want
claiming more power on the international stage.
And you do not want America to cede its influence internationally at this point, right? Like, this can be a long-term goal. Like, let's turn it over to Europe. I think that would be great, right?
Yeah.
Like, Americans clearly have fatigue on this issue, right?
Yeah.
We don't like our foreign policy. But our foreign policy is what maintains the current order. And Biden is... A vote for a Democrat at this point in the presidency maintains that order. A vote for Donald Trump or a Republican seeks to erode that influence and that power. and whatever, is caving to like the whole Russian disinformation thing that like it turns out that like has been all through like the Republican. You heard this one came out this last week or last 2 weeks ago, right? That their disinformation has been educating the Republican, like the Republican Party, officials in the party, elected officials in the party, their actual stance on issues. And it's just like fucking hell, right?
Yeah.
Like, this cannot be where this country is going. Not now.
And it's just an absolute fact. It doesn't, I know how much you align more with your third party candidate.
Yeah.
But you just have to understand, it doesn't matter what your moral compass says. A vote for Cornel West is a vote for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
It just jumps directly over Cornell and onto Donald. It's just, that is a direct vote.
Yeah.
So think of it that way. It's the only actual way to, anyway, now we're going to get 1,000 different emails.
It's the only actual way to think, Dan.
We've
I don't know. That's
not what I really meant. I stopped saying that sentence. So if it didn't complete, then it doesn't count. And we can,
I know, but it was hanging in the air and I just wanted to.
I know. Yeah. We should move on. Let's have some more fun stuff. So, Alexandra wrote into us, who this is about, the IVF thing, the whole in vitro fertilization thing and the shit that happened down in Alabama about it. And Alexandra says, just a few bizarre complications I've thought of now that embryos are children. IVF clinics often store frozen embryos off-site, sometimes in other states. So now are they involved in interstate child trafficking? Do people who have frozen embryos in storage get to claim them as dependents on taxes for other benefits?
Sure.
Which I feel like,
yeah, why not?
Frozen embryos can be safely stored for more than a decade before successful implantation. So now some 11-year-olds in Alabama can buy and drink alcohol. And 6-year-olds can get a driver's license.
Seems
like the logical conclusion. I would wonder if embryos are falling behind in school since they can't read even at 10 years old. But it's Alabama, so that's pretty much at average for their education system. Oh, ooh, shots fired, Bama.
Wow. Well, they should be issuing certificates. I mean,
right?
I mean, they're not birth certificates, but like embryo.
Like fertilization.
Fertilization. Certificate of fertilization.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the absurdity abounds.
Yeah.
And I like those ones that you pointed out, Alexandra. Craig wrote into us to say, hi, Frank and Dan. I just finished episode 634, Mormon Swingers.
Mm.
You remember that one?
Yeah. That was a good episode.
And you mentioned that you wanted to hear other experiences with other swinging.
Oh.
When I was a younger gay guy in Salt Lake, we'd use Craigslist to find other people to hang out with.
Wow, yeah.
Because this was before the apps.
Yeah, yeah.
You young people don't know that there was a time before apps. There were frequent posts from guys who would only meet other guys if they were worthy LDS recommend holders.
What?
It was a bit cringy, but on the same level as the posts from down low guys, quote unquote down low guys, which almost certainly meant that they were cheating on their wives. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I once got invited to a private Yahoo group. This would be a chat room.
Right.
Or something. And they were organizing a garment party at a downtown hotel. You had to present your up-to-date temple recommend.
What?
This is all like deep Mormon speak, but like you have to, like, temple recommends, you have to like be worthy of, and you have to be like not gay. That's one of the things you have to definitely be. Anyway, Craig says, I decided not to go, but always wondered what an underground Mormon member in good standing orgy would have been like.
Ugh.
That's amazing.
Well,
I still know guys who have garment fetishes.
Yeah, that's a thing.
It's totally a thing.
It's one I do not share. I don't get it. No, they're not attractive at all.
Oh, no. It's the ugliest of all of the underwear, for sure.
Yeah.
It is the least sexy underwear known to mankind, but I think it's what it represents.
And I guess fetishes aren't always about, like, just looking good, but...
No, it's about defiling something sexy, something pure. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm still not there. I think they're so gross. I'm just like...
Yeah, for sure. So you've given up your membership to mormonboys.com?
Yeah, I mean...
It has lapsed.
Yeah, I let it lapse, I guess.
Oh, that sucks. Yeah. I wanted to shout out really quickly, every now and then, you know, a lot of you, my lovely listeners, thank you so much, have left kind reviews of our show on iTunes and whatnot. Warren the dog recently did a very lovely, I'm just going to read it to you, Frank, because I don't know if you know it, but, this Warren the dog said, I left for a bit thinking I had too many subscriptions. I would rather give up Netflix and Amazon Prime. I'm back and I'm telling everybody.
Oh my God. That's awesome.
So that's very sweet. If you haven't yet given us 5 stars and left a review, you're welcome to. It just so you know, we read them. It means something to us. It's very nice.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right. We got a couple people to thank. I'm going to start us off with someone who is a former and now once again a subscriber over on PayPal. Marcy, who is a deacon in our magic powers priesthood. So thank you so much, Marcy, for that. If you, friends, would like to be one of our patrons or, if you can afford to give us a little bit of your coin, just chuck a coin for your witcher, go ahead and go over to thankgodimatheist.com/support. I don't know. Find the support tab. Click on that.
There's no slash on that one. It's just good. Find the support tab on the website
and click on it. And then sign up, and it's easy. And then forget that you're doing it, and then give us money for the rest of our lives.
Woohoo!
And I think that's the right way to go about it.
Well, as long as we're posting episodes.
Yeah. And we got one more person to thank.
We do indeed, Dan. We have our top donor, our Lord and Savior, Davis.
More show coming up. Well, Franklin,
Dan,
we're going to close out on some of the best news that we have, which is that people are leaving the Mormon Church.
But I'm confident, Dan, you're going to find the sour note in here somewhere. Around the 10 to 15 minute mark in this conversation.
They're leaving the Mormon Church and joining the KKK.
They're also really anti-Semitic for some reason.
Nope, actually that's not the case at all. The news from my perspective is kind of all good here. In terms of this new survey that just came out, this was done by Messrs. Josh Coates and Stephen Cranny. I don't know who they are, but they were looking into the phenomenon of the LDS Church just hemorrhaging members,
right?
Especially here,
right?
And so they wanted to figure it out. They're from the B.H. Roberts Foundation, and so they did an old school method for this, which was that they sent out like postcards,
yeah,
like which is so crazy.
Postcards and targeted Facebook ads, apparently.
Yeah. Just to get a handle on what Exmos are who are you guys? What's going on with you people?
Mm-hmm.
So here's what they discovered. To everyone's shock and surprise, the gays are leaving the Mormon Church.
That I don't understand that one.
Why?
That just does not make sense to me.
Just stay.
They say that, you know, that God is cool with same with my, well, wait, no, they don't say that it's cool.
No,
but they're like, they accept the members who are experiencing same sex attraction as long as they don't act on it.
Right.
And they're totally feel, oh yeah, you're gay. Well, just don't be gay.
Right. Just either have sex with someone to whom you are not fully attracted.
They have backed off on that advice.
Yes.
That's one of the options open to you.
That is, or you can just be a virgin forever.
Yeah.
You can just never have sex ever for the rest of your life, which some people are doing, which makes me very sad. But most, I think a solid percentage of LGBTQ Mormons are just leaving, and that's lovely.
Thank God. Those are the, I applaud it. Thank you. Thanks for leaving.
Yes, please continue.
Mm-hmm.
Another nice stat is how many Mormons are leaving because they just, their belief in God, they have figured it out.
Woohoo!
Among, believing members, or among, regular attending members of the Mormon Church, fewer than 20% claim that they even doubt God at all. But among those whom have left, well over 20% are full-on atheist.
Amazing.
So over 40% are either atheist, claim to be atheist or agnostic. With
amazing.
Yeah. So there you go. They're not believing. The next highest thing is they have some nebulous belief in a higher power, but they don't. Yeah.
Anywho, whatever that means.
But more ex-Mormons are atheist and agnostic than the sort of the general societal concept of nuns.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
So that's good.
And you have to figure a lot of those belief in a higher power are nuns.
Yeah.
Right. Even the believes sometimes one.
Yeah.
Believes in God sometimes. Oh, okay. Believes.
Which is so funny. Occasionally I'll believe, on a night out, it'll just be fun for shits and giggles. Yeah. We'll be believers for the night. And that's a good time.
But Dan, that's 70% of ex-Mormons are believe sometimes in God, belief in a higher power, agnostic or atheist. That's a phenomenal number of just people who are unsure and really don't care that much, to be honest.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is great. Yeah. They're not going to another church.
Yeah. Sometimes.
And you guys, you and I have been saying this for a while, that ex-Mormons, unlike other, if you're in another religion, there's lots of religions where if you want to leave that church, you go and you find another church.
Sure.
That is not what happens for Mormons.
Yeah. Like if you're Baptist, let's go try Methodist for a minute. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like how they're doing things. I don't like, this place. So I'll just, maybe Catholics are good. I don't know. We'll give it a shot.
But yeah, no, Mormons, I think that it's your high demand groups, the Mormons, the Jehovah's Witnesses, probably even the Seventh Day Adventists,
Yeah.
We kind of all get grouped in together a lot, I think, and some of this
fairly
kind of stuff.
I think that's fair
to
group them together.
Sort of as far as the effects that the belief in these groups have sort of on the psyche and leaving the group and how difficult that can be. And when you're done with it, you're just fuck it all, right? No way. Well, I also believe that it was I remember kind of having the thought of I had been taught that all the other beliefs were just such bogus bullshit, right?
Right.
My entire life, that I kind of was just why they're all bogus bullshit. Why would I even care to go see what any of them have to say? Right. I was already so primed that the others are all so wrong.
Yeah.
So
very, yeah. So, Other findings about who's leaving the Mormon Church. It's good people, it turns out. In that When you look at how they sort of relate to the rest of the population on moral foundations, they're very high on the morality of harm versus care. That's a very important, those are very important concepts to the ex-Mormons. Whereas current Latter-day Saints, that's, they're quite low on that. Exes are into fairness and reciprocity when current Mormons, much less so. Current Mormons are very into, and by the way, these line up pretty directly with liberal versus conservative. Mormons are very into in-group and loyalty, which obviously former Mormons are not.
Right.
Mormons are very into authority and respect, another thing that lines up with conservative thinking. And the ex-Mormons don't believe in that. And then the current Mormons very into purity / sanctity. And of course, that is not a value that we ex-Mormons share with them.
No. I don't think so.
Yeah. The ex-Mormons, yeah, there's a bunch of other things. They have smaller families. They're more likely to get divorced and whatever because there's not a the societal prohibition that Mormonisms have.
Right.
Many say that they left the church because the church's history is obviously bullshit.
Right. What? So, I mean, Joseph Smith was lying? He didn't actually translate the Book of Mormon?
So these assholes claim.
Brigham Young was a giant racist?
Yeah.
Huh. All right.
And the Book of Mormon is like a nonsense book?
Filled with racist ideas?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And the best one is that the vast majority of them, and we're talking 82% just on the highest thing, are 82% say they are very unlikely to ever return to church. 10 more percent say they are unlikely. So that's 92% who believe it is unlikely, and most of them very unlikely that they would ever go back to church.
Unbelievable. I mean, actually, I do believe it. Like, once you're out, it's just like, no, why would I ever go back? The very likely to return, 1%. I like that.
Yeah.
1% likely to return, 1%.
Yeah.
2% think that they'll go back.
Which means that they're probably not really out. They're just, you know, they got too bored for a while and they've never thought about it much anyway and didn't care about it. And they'll just probably go back at some point.
Well, so the narrative amongst active Mormons about why people leave, at least this used to be the case, probably still is a strong, you know, train of thought, is that the people leave because they're offended by something.
Yes.
Right. Those that 1% very likely, 1% likely, that's your offended group.
Yeah.
Right. Because I mean, that is a thing, right? A nasty, sure. I mean, I've encountered people who were offended by the bishop. Right.
Yeah.
But it's usually because the bishop was a conservative douchebag and they were a little bit more of a moderate.
Right.
But nonetheless, these are amazing numbers. Love them. I love them, Dan.
Yeah, like, it's good news. And you know, it is a much higher demand religion than many in the US. So like, it's not going to track out exactly like everything else. But when you play it out, when you look at the trends in the United States and, you know, Europe and some other places, the trends are all going in the right direction.
Yeah, they're great.
Woohoo! So there you go. On that happy note, we'll end the show so that Frank can't yell at me again. If you would like to tell us your whatever you are story, please feel free to reach out to us, podcast@thankgodimatheist.com,
or call and leave us a voicemail message. We'd love to hear from you. The telephone number is 424-666-8442.
Go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/TGIAtheist, and click the like button.
And if you'd like to join one of our members-only lounges, you can do so by going to our website, thankgodimatheist.com/members-only.
Yeah. Thanks so much to the Red Rock Hot Club for the use of their music.
And thanks to Gordon Johnston for the use of his music.
And thanks to all y'all for tuning in. We sure do appreciate you.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.